a radio show host called Paul Gallant.
It's Gallant.
That's a G.
No, and George.
Thanks, Joe.
Yeah!
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, located at the Gentle Bend Tasting Room in Alvin. Here's Paul Gallant and Joe George.
That one's hit sharply into center field. That's a base hit. Cesar Salazar has three hits and three RBIs and four at-bats on the season, two tonight, to make it a 3-1 game.
You start calling him the machine.
I respect Todd Callis's professionalism there, but I refuse to acknowledge the Houston Astros' 4-1 victory over the Chicago White Sox yesterday.
Boo.
In spite of all the positives, which include Hunter Brown going another six innings with six strikeouts, a game where Chaz McCormick had a double, Jake Myers had a couple of doubles, where after an absolutely horrendous decision to run home by Victor Caratini, injuring his leg in the process, Cesar Salazar steps in and gets two hits. I refuse to acknowledge this victory. It should have been a sweep, and if the Astros want to impress me, you know what they have to do? Invent a time machine.
Ooh.
Go back in time, win the first game of the series, get the sweep. I refuse to be happy about this. I'm going to be a grumpy little panda all day, even though we are actually at a fantastic spot. We are at the Gentle Bend Tasting Room in Alvin, Texas, home of Nolan Ryan.
It is a beautiful, beautiful place. I understand where you're coming from, Paul. I understand. I also would like a time machine.
Yeah.
I could get ahead of my baldness.
Okay.
If I had a time machine.
That's what you would get ahead of?
We could have never signed Jose Abreu.
You would have. So the first thing you would do instead of stopping Hitler would be to go prevent your baldness.
Well, so, that's not fair, Paul. That's not fair. This is not fair, okay? I think in simple terms, I'm a simpleton. I'm not a historian.
You're very selfish. Very me.
I'm a me guy, okay? I'm gonna make sure that Jose Abreu is never an Astro. I'm going to make sure that I attack my baldness when it starts to happen.
Okay.
I don't know what else I'm going to do. But you know what? Yeah, maybe I'd also stop Hitler.
Yeah, I think that would be the first thing that I would do. The second thing I would do, stop Genghis Khan. Third thing I would do, stop Joseph Stalin. Fourth thing I do, stop Mao Zedong.
Wow.
Fifth thing I do is go back in time and have the Astros beat the White Sox, who are a bum-ass franchise, and the Astros should be in the process of sweeping them this afternoon. And yeah, I'm sorry. I'm a negative Nelly. I'm a Debbie Downer. Don't care. They should have won the game on Tuesday night. And while I did sit through all of last night's game and watch like a good little sports reporter boy,
I'm surprised by that.
I'm still upset about what happened.
No, I understand. Like, that first game is a mess. You're playing the Chicago White Sox. They're the worst team in baseball, maybe besides the Oakland A's. Those are the bottom two teams. And, you know, you're talking about Dana Brown after the game trying to cut the lead in half and, you know, get back within four games, five games of the Mariners to, you know, reach back into the wild card race. You lose games to the White Sox, you've just lost the ability to, you know, deserve grace for that. You know, this is not a couple years ago. You know, or even last year when you're getting swept by the A's, and but you're still winning the division in the end. You just don't deserve that grace right now. But Cesar Salazar, Caesar Salad, was very impressive yesterday.
That's racist, Joe. Two strikes in 1 second.
Okay, guess what? Jeremy Bram, Joel Blank, blame them. They came up with it.
They called him that?
Yeah. Because I think it's we couldn't remember his name last year when he came up.
Julia Morales was calling him Sally in the post-game interview that she did with him.
That's worse.
And obviously you heard Jeff Blum there say, the machine. I'm not really sure where that one came from.
Yeah, I don't know if I get that reference from Blummer there. I don't know if there's a movie reference I'm missing.
Same here. I don't know.
But you call him Julius Cesar. Would it be better, maybe? But it was
See, that's a history reference. You got me.
But
would you go back in time and stop Julius Caesar?
That's a good question. I'd say no.
You probably should, because he did kill all the Gauls who I'm descended from. So once again, strike three, Joe. You're out.
Strike three. I'm out. See you, bye.
Joe's walking away from the microphone. Now he's putting the headset back
on.
Hey,
look, I live 10 minutes from here, okay? I can be home at 15. So easy day for Joe. Let's do the live reads. Well, it's because of traffic. Let's do the live reads, and let me get out of here for the day. Goodbye.
Oh, cool.
Have a couple drinks.
I mean, that's the first thing we have to do.
I know. Yeah. I'm looking forward to that.
So we are going to be here all day, and I'm glad that most Astros fans agreed with me when they put that out last night on Twitter. Ekelund says at Joe George Radio, at Sean A. Mapes back at Mission Control. Most people agree. There was one person that said, you must acknowledge the Astros' injuries. And I was like, yeah, of course. I mean, there's no Kyle Tucker. Hopefully Yordan Alvarez is back from the family situation that he was dealing with today. Does look like he's in the lineup. So at the very least, you've got that going for you. You're not 100% sure what's going on with Justin Verlander. Yiner Diaz, at least, hey, he's back. So that's neato. But with all the injuries, you still should beat the Chicago White Sox in three games. They did get one today, or excuse me, yesterday. Neato, splendid, wonderful. But, Joe, I think it's time we start talking about another baseball team.
Oh, no.
No, don't say oh, no. This is not me bandwagon jumping.
Oh, this is our baseball
team. This is our baseball team. We are the home of the Pacific Coast League first half champion, Sugarland Space Cowboys.
Yes, we are.
I bet you didn't know that. Also, it's pretty interesting that the Triple-A playoffs are essentially this. There are two halves.
Yes.
The team that comes in first place at the end of half one is a league champion. The team that comes in first place at the end of half two is a league champion. Those two teams play each other for the Pacific Coast League Championship, best of three series, and then whoever wins that plays the team from the International League, the other Triple-A league, for the championship, but it's just one game. It's a very bizarre playoff situation, but guess what? Your Space Cowboys, they're the Pacific Coast League first half champions. It's Space Cowboys time, bitch.
Well, it's Space Cowboys time, but the problem is like they might tank it out here soon. Joey Loperfido, eligible to come back today. So maybe he gets the call up for the Astros today.
That's true.
You know, before the Astros return and play Baltimore this weekend. So maybe he's coming up. Jake Bloss is skipping Double-A, coming right to the majors. He's starting tomorrow.
Let's make Bryce Matthews do the same thing. You know, Bryce Matthews, he's played one game for Corpus Christi. How about he goes straight to the majors?
Let's bring him up.
Just do it.
Yeah, why not?
All in with the baby Astros or something like that. I don't know if you've been paying attention to Sugarland Space Cowboys baseball like me, Joe George.
Probably not as much. I'm not as much of a baseball savant as you.
I mean, right. Yeah. Right. I did say yesterday I hate the sport with a passion when the team that you're covering on a daily basis isn't good. But that's why I've switched. Big-time minor league baseball guy now. And I got to say that that broadcaster in El Paso, Texas, Sean, I don't know if you can get this ready for me really quickly. Sorry to throw you on the spot from all the way down here in Alvin, Texas, home of Nolan Ryan. There's a bit of discrimination going on against Joey Loperfido in last night's El Paso Chihuahuas, I believe, Sugarland Space Cowboys game.
Jose Loperfido steps into bat. The center fielder for the Space Cowboys, a left-handed hitter. He's 0-for-1 with a ground ball into a double play.
I mean, that is just flat-out racism. I mean, that's anti-Italian discrimination.
That's just not his name. It's just disrespectful. He is Joey Mario Loperfido.
Right. His name is Mario Joseph.
That's right. I got it flipped.
Loperfido. I mean, he is an Italian-American hero. And, I mean, leave it to El Paso on the border that's trying to turn everything into Little Mexico, huh? What are we doing here? Come on. But on a serious note, Sugarland Space Cowboys, shout out to them. And, you know, we're the home of Sugarland Space Cowboys baseball, and we're going to have a fun all time next week at a Sugarland Space Cowboys game. Got to come out. Watch me throw a first pitch. Watch Jeremy Branham try to throw a first pitch. It's going to be June 27th. ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 night next Thursday. You can get tickets for just $9.25 by entering the promo code ESPN 925. So take care of business this afternoon.
Please.
You got the Baltimore Orioles over the weekend. I will admit that even though I am annoyed with the Astros and feel the need to shun them and not acknowledge their victory yesterday, I am excited for their weekend series against the Baltimore Orioles. I don't know why I am. It's perhaps a bad idea to be excited about that, but I am excited.
Well, because that's the series that could probably give you the most hope, I would say. If you win that series against Baltimore, you know, you win today, Spencer Arrighetti, hopefully you can have a bounce-back start. And then you have Bloss and Blanco, and I think I can't remember who's pitching on Sunday. But you beat Baltimore, and then everything that Dana Brown's been, like, you know, feeding us and trying to tell us about, you know, this season and what their expectations are and how they're going to turn it around and what their goals are. They seem a little bit more obtainable if you win the series versus Baltimore. this weekend who had a back-and-forth game last night with the Yankees and roughed up Gerrit Cole a little bit in his first start back for the Yankees. So if you do that, that's why there's a reason to be excited, because it also feels like it's the end if it doesn't go well.
Yeah, if it doesn't go well, I'd probably say, I'm out.
I feel like that's when the door shuts.
I mean, we're still holding out hope here.
I don't know. If they sweep you this weekend, then I don't know how much hope can be left. I don't know what the spin zone is, you know, what the Astros PR machine tries to turn up and give us and spoon feed us and tell us everything's going to be okay. But if you lose this weekend in a devastating way, getting swept, and honestly, even just losing 2 out of 3, there's not going to be a lot of reason for hope, because then it goes back to what we've been talking about all season long. The Astros are only really beating awful baseball teams.
Oh, I thought the back of the baseball card. Oh, okay. Yeah,
yeah,
that
well, the,
too.
The back of the Astros season's baseball card says they only beat awful baseball teams, that they don't really win series versus good baseball teams. So if anything's going to happen, if the Hunter Brown resurgence and really just like career rebranding that he's done in his last 6 starts is real and matters, what Blanco's done, if that matters, if, as you know, McCullers and Garcia and Verlander, as those guys all start to slowly trickle back into the rotation, it does start this weekend versus Baltimore, where if there's going to be a hope left, you have to win that series.
Correct.
That's why today, it's just like, it still to me feels like a foregone conclusion they're going to win. Probably don't deserve that still.
I don't feel quite that way.
I still do for some reason.
I feel like Spencer Arrighetti, given the last time we saw him out there, is perfectly capable of falling flat on his face. But hey, maybe it won't happen. We're hanging out at the Gentle Bend Tasting Room. Come out and join us. It is Gallant and George, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Joe George to my right. I'm Paul Gallant. We're on YouTube at ESPN Houston, twitch.tv/ESPN975. I can't believe that this Houston Astro has this nickname, but he might have earned it. We'll explain why next. Stick around.
It's Gallant and George
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, located at the Gentle Bend Tasting Room in Alvin. Here's Paul Gallant and Joe George.
Astros, not the hottest ticket in town, but Houston Texans training camp tickets sold out in 20 minutes today.
Ooh.
Uh-oh, Astros.
People are excited.
It's football time in Houston, and we're ready to sit out in the sun in 95-degree heat and all that humidity to watch practice.
And I don't know if McLean's going this year, so who's the first media member to complain about no AC?
I'll fall on the sword for that.
Yeah.
How is there no air conditioning outside? What is this?
Yeah.
What is this, a training camp for people that live outside? The unhoused? A couple of comments from our last segment, 713-780-3776. I am shunning the Houston Astros and refusing to give them credit for yesterday's victory. Eric the Driver texts in, wow, you did what was expected and beat the worst team in baseball. Am I supposed to be impressed? Good. We just all need to have this collective mentality.
I agree. Yeah, like what I'm impressed with in yesterday's game is Hunter Brown. But it's not about yesterday's game. It's about the package of starts that he's put together over the last month and a half. It's the continuation that he's been really turned his season around in a massive, massive way. I still don't know if he gives, like, ace vibes to me, but he gives very solid, good starter vibes.
Do you think he's earned the nickname Diesel? Apparently that is his nickname. They are trying to make that a thing. The Houston Astros Twitter account tweeted, Diesel's on the hill today. I will say, he has pitched better of late. But I do feel the need to push back against nicknames for guys too early.
Yeah, I don't know. Diesel must have been an early nickname, because I think he's had that since he came up. But they're just like really pushing it now a little bit more. I do feel like you got to, you know, ease on. The nickname seems to be the new thing that we're going with the Astros. Everyone's getting nicknames. Everyone's getting them.
You should have to be good before you get a nickname.
Or you get an ironic nickname if you're not very good.
Yeah. You can't give yourself a nickname. I'm looking at his Wikipedia page. I see no evidence that somebody has given him this nickname Diesel before. So at the very least, this is not like me when I was 8 giving myself the nickname Slash, or me when I was 16 giving myself the nickname the PG Train. Okay? Not that. And I will admit, as someone who has been down that road before, I mean, I am not one to talk.
I mean, it's better than like I've seen worse. I've heard of worse.
They're both terrible.
The worst nickname, the worst person to ever give themselves a nickname was Paul George.
PG3?
Playoff P.
Playoff P, right.
When he started calling himself Playoff P, and he is objectively terrible in the playoffs for most of his career, that's not good.
Yeah,
you can't do that. You can't call yourself Playoff P and then be bad in the playoffs.
Okay. Caesar Salad for Cesar Salazar is better.
Or the Machine, as Palmer called them.
Sally and the Machine. From the 832, at least Diesel is more creative than other Astros nicknames. Most of them, not so good. Yeah.
But I agree.
I still want to understand why it's Diesel, though.
Probably because something about being from Detroit.
Is Detroit a diesel town?
I don't know.
Okay. I don't know much about cars.
I'm just guessing here.
I only know about Hemi engines, and they're in some cars.
Guess what?
This has been Paul talking cars.
I don't even know that. So,
does it have a Hemi? If it doesn't, get out. Not part of my country. So Hunter Brown did look good. And to what you were saying a little bit ago, Joe, is he going to get back to the point where everyone was hyping him up as the second coming of Justin Verlander? I'm pretty skeptical about that. But his last 6 starts since May 22nd against the Angels, where he went 6 innings, he has gone at least 6 innings in each of those starts. 6 straight quality starts. And generally, we have seen 6 strikeouts or more in every outing outside of that May 22nd outing. It's ever since he's added this second fastball. It's a two-seamer. Some are calling it a sinker. Whatever the case, it's working, and no one's caught up to it yet.
Yeah, and if it can continue, that's great. I mean, a 2.45 ERA over his last 50.1 innings is great for Hunter Brown. I think at one point, what he hits before he gave up the run yesterday, he'd gone 16 straight innings without giving up a run. He looks like a totally different pitcher. Like, as much grief as people give Miller and Murphy, the pitching coaches for the Houston Astros, this is where you have to acknowledge them and say whatever they've done with Hunter Brown is incredible. Spencer Arrighetti, besides his last start, had looked like he was turning a corner. Hopefully he bounces back today. What Rodolfo Blanco has done this year. So while guys like Montero, who's just probably terrible, are on this team, and Ryan Pressly is struggling in his role, the younger guys, Brown, Arrighetti, Blanco, are seemingly figuring things out throughout this season. Either they're starting that way with Blanco or they're going into it with Hunter Brown. That's a very positive thing that even in a season full of suck, that's a good thing.
Is Joe Espada the reason for that?
He's not Miller and Murphy. His last name is Espada.
Josh Miller. Who's Murphy?
The other pitching coach.
Okay. So it's the pitching coaches. You're not giving any credit to Joe Espada?
He's not a pitching coach.
I mean, but he's the coach that's in charge of the pitching coach.
Yeah, I mean, is he?
That's a good question. I actually don't know.
He didn't hire them.
So they're just holdovers?
They're holdovers.
From the Dusty Baker era. A couple of comments on our Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975. In response to the nickname The Diesel for Hunter Brown, he throws gas, says Todd the Show. Sure, I just don't think of diesel when I think of high speed. I think of diesel for trucks.
Mm-hmm.
So I think of a guy who would be able to pitch like 150 pitches or something like that. Fake Tony Stark says, I thought we were going with downtown Hunter Brown. I don't know if that one really works.
I don't feel like I've heard that one.
I haven't either. I mean, that's just rhyming.
Yeah.
And I mean, you know, with Hunter Brown earlier in the year where some of the balls were going to downtown.
Yeah, I feel like that's a bad nickname.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like a great nickname.
Yeah, downtown Hunter Brown is when he's given up 5 home runs in a game.
But he has been good over the course of the last 2 months. I refuse to acknowledge the Astros' victory yesterday. Sean, I was really mad at the base running. The base running, my God. Early on in that game, I was thinking, are they going to lose it again? This is what the first thought I have. So you had a situation where you had a runner on third base, and I felt like the Astros actually would have been able to make it home, And instead, Victor Caratini is the runner on third, and he gets caught on a ground ball between third and home. He should not have gone home. There were no outs. He chooses to run home, and while running home, he's out by a mile, and he has the worst slide into home plate I think I've ever seen, and now he's injured. How long he's out, who knows, but it was that. There were a couple other moments, too, where I look at the base running for this team, and yeah, there was a moment where Jeremy Pena went first to third, and he probably shouldn't have been able to do that, but it was nice running by him. But for the most part, the base running on this team, they said it was going to be better. They said they were going to be more aggressive, and it feels like the aggressiveness is actually carelessness.
Yeah, yes, that was not aggressiveness. That is carelessness. And Joe Espada's update today was that Victor Caratini is getting imaging on his left quad. Espada said Caratini was, quote, pretty sore, and he did term it a potential IL situation.
Okay.
So, great.
Great.
Another injured player for the Astros.
It is crazy how many guys are hurt at this point.
Yeah, it is. But it's still not an excuse for me.
I agree.
I understand they have all these pitching injuries. You can't ignore it, but Josh Hader's not hurt. Ryan Presley's not hurt. Brian Abreu's not hurt. Rafael Montero's not hurt. So when they're blowing games in the 7th, 8th, 9th, and 6th innings, you know, those guys aren't hurt. They're just terrible at times. And your lineup, you know, Yordan Alvarez, yes, he's missed the last two games. He has not missed major chunks of time. When the Astros are awful with runners in scoring position, well, it doesn't matter. Like be a pro baseball team. Be a pro baseball player. Get guys home. You know, the injuries, at some point, you just have to move past it. And we just talked about Hunter Brown. Ronald Blanco, you know, what these guys have given to your rotation, that's where most of your injuries are.
Yeah.
Like, how much better are the Astros really with Luis Garcia instead of Spencer Arrighetti right now?
I think they would be better with Garcia.
For sure.
The last we saw from Garcia was so good. Now, I don't know if he'll ever be that guy again, but he was so good the first couple of starts last year. I was really excited about it. He'll be better than Arrighetti.
But they have, like, what, three more wins this season probably?
Yeah, I mean, that's to that point, I agree with you. The offense has been so often scoring three runs or less. They did get over three last night. They got four. And you look at the lineup top to bottom, even with the injuries, and that has been the most frustrating thing, I think, is they just are so damn spotty. We have a question. This is somewhat baseball-related, and again, shun that Astros victory yesterday. Don't even acknowledge it. Put them in the corner. Just ignore them completely. I don't know if this ever works for you, Joe, as a parent, but sometimes I feel like you just got to ignore your kid.
Put them in timeout.
Yeah. You put them in timeout.
Put them in timeout, and you walk away.
This is from the poor Marine phone. If the Dodgers play the Yankees in the World Series, who do you want to see win?
Well, that's a good question.
For me, Dodgers. I can't, but I'm from Boston. I hate the Yankees. I hate New York.
I'm going to say the Yankees because I like the idea that the Dodgers' only championship is their Mickey Mouse championship and all that trash that those fans, those loony bins talk.
Okay.
That they still can't claim a 162-game World Series in this era.
I do enjoy when the Dodgers blow it in the playoffs, in particular when Clayton Kershaw is the reason it happens.
Yeah, that's a tough question.
It's mainly because Kershaw, he's so good in the regular season, and he's so bad in the postseason, and really the difference between the two for him doesn't make a whole lot of sense. It is Gallant and George, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. We are at the Gentle Bend Tasting Room in Alvin, Texas, if you want to come out and hang out with us. Looking forward to some whiskey sipping later on in today's show. Coming up next, it's really crazy how the perception of this Houston sports team has changed over the last calendar year. You're going to hear audio evidence of that perception, which maybe isn't being shared by everybody here in Houston, but on the outside looking in. Holy smokes. Gallant and George, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Stick around. We do have a couple of texts with nickname suggestions for the Astros. It's from the 713. His name is Hunter. He's got the rifle power, so you just call him by his first name. Hunter the Hunter.
That's not good enough.
Rated R.
Not enough.
Jason Statham is just a everyday man who operates on a diesel engine in his
garage in the backyard. And by night, he's a Houston Astros pitcher after one throw of a wrench at a henchman's face led to the Astros figuring out that he can throw 100 miles per hour.
How about that?
I mean, you could sell me on this movie.
I really was just spitballing on that one.
Yeah, you could sell me on that.
Okay, cool. Jason Statham. I learned today, Jason Statham, high diver. Before he was an actor, high diver.
Okay.
Like, almost made the national British team for high diving.
Interesting.
Yeah, very random.
I watched a really awful Jason Statham movie this weekend.
Oh, what was that?
I watched Meg 2.
Oh, I got to watch Meg 1.
They're one of those movies that they're both just so bad they're good.
It looks like the 2020s edition of Deep Blue Sea, which is objectively terrible movie that's so awesome.
Yeah.
Because it's not just Samuel L. Jackson's speech only for, bad things to happen, or LL Cool J and his pet parrot, but it's the sharks that are smart. They got brains.
Yeah, it's kind of like Fast and the Furious vibes. I mean, it's because he's in it, but where it's just these giant sharks they're trying to kill.
So, look, the perception of the Houston Astros is what it is right now. It's starting to change very quickly, and I can understand why a lot of people are tuned out. But the perception of the Houston Texans has dramatically changed over the course of the last calendar year. And the proof today, I mean, they sold out training camp tickets in 20 minutes. There is a ton of buzz for this team this year, even if our angsty little toxic twitchers don't want to hear it. But I think you can hear proof of this with Randall Cobb, former Houston Texans wide receiver, who has perhaps the most radiant eyes I've ever seen. I don't care how that makes me sound. Randall Cobb's eyes are, they just pierce you. Are they gray? Are they blue? I don't know.
Hazel? That's a real color.
But it's not hazel. Because some people have hazel. A very select few of me have green eyes. But he's got something else completely.
These are contacts.
Oh, you think he's pulling a Dennis Rodman or something like that? Oh, damn.
He's doing specialty colors here.
Well, anyway, Randall Cobb, former Houston Texans wide receiver, used to play here and now is talking about just the NFL as a whole. He was on Bussing with the Boys, Taylor Lewan, Will Compton, a football podcast, and he talked about how impressed he is by Texans general manager Nick Caserio.
So they hire him as the head coach. They bring in Caserio from the Patriots. And the first time I met Caserio, I knew he was like, he's the guy. Like he's gonna fix this place. His first day, I remember, of the offseason that year, he had 27 transactions on day one of free agency. I was like, oh, he's getting ready to flip the roster, completely flip it.
I mean, that's pretty interesting hearing that coming from Cobb, because it wasn't that long ago, Joe, where in 2021, after he had been traded from the Texans to the Packers, he went on a very long, semi-complimentary at the end tangent about what a disaster the Texans were. Here is more Randall Cobb, this time in 2021, at an introductory press conference with the Green Bay Packers.
I can breathe again. You know, I've seen the other side, and I'm excited to be back here, and I'm excited. I'm smiling. It's funny. My teammates say, "You act like you just got out of prison." I said, "Well, you know, I'm very, very, very excited to be here." You know, that's nothing against Houston. You know, whenever I talk about that, you know, I'm thinking of. Green Bay is like a Fortune 500 company, and the Texans are a new franchise. They're a startup that's figuring out their way, and I think that the moves that they made when they brought Caserio in and Coach Coley, I think that they're on a path. I think they have a plan in place, and I saw a lot of things changing over the past 4 months that I was there. You know, I've been rehabbing the entire offseason, so I saw all the different changes, and I know that they're doing right. And they're going and they're trending in the right direction. So they're still working through some things, but I'm very excited for them as well.
I mean,
It's quite the change over 3 years. When you start off that quote about the Texans and where you were, saying, well, I can breathe again.
Yeah.
And it was like prison. No matter if moments later you say, no, they're a startup company and I'm on a Fortune 500 team. I mean, you can't put that one back in the box.
No, he tried. He tried in that quote.
Because,
like, the end of that quote sounds similar to what it is now. To be honest, like, I don't – that to me, it does feel like a little bit of what he's saying now or recently is a little bit of a revisionist history. You know, like, you know, you're turning over the roster. You're making all these transactions. You knew Nick Caserio was the guy, but yet you joked that it was like leaving prison. And look, things were a disaster.
It's problematic, here. By the way.
Things were a disaster when Randall Cobb left. I mean, that is like peak Easterby era. The Deshaun Watson stuff is still – he's still on the team, but he's not here. Like, it's the chaos of what – Culley, I guess he's talking about there. It's a mess. And so I don't blame him for feeling that way. You hear back, and he's right. Like, when you look back to what the Texans were, he is 100% right. They were the biggest joke in the NFL. And it shows how, like, one or two moves can really change the foundation of a franchise in such a big way.
Yeah, it does help when you stumble into C.J. Stroud with the second overall pick, and a guy that used to play here actually looks at this organization after the years – that they've had since he's been gone and thinks to himself, you know what, I actually want to be the coach of this organization. But they have done a fantastic job of changing the perception, partly due to their play on the field. But I also thought they did a very good job before the draft, from January of 23 to the draft. I thought they did a very good job of finally listening and finally being self-aware for a change. And, you know, to talk about why maybe Randall Cobb was comparing the Texan situation to prison and saying he can finally breathe again with the Green Bay Packers. He can say it, but Bob McNair can't talk about prison? Huh. Uh-huh. Double standard. Just kidding. Randall Cobb, here he is talking about the real problem in Houston while he was there, Bill O'Brien.
Bill O'Brien, I'll tell you right now, I was not a fan of Bill O'Brien.
Yeah.
Well, how was he when you were with him in the building? Fair enough. We can move on.
Yes, sir. Next question, please.
Yeah. Damn, that bad.
Only got 2 months with him. So it's hard for me to be able to really, you know, I only saw what I saw.
He's a dude they talk in the sideline as a head coach.
Right.
I'd be jogging by and he'd be like, "F*** you, LaJuan. F*** you, Bill." He said, "What's your name?" That whole thing.
So I was in Green Bay and I was in Dallas before I went to Houston. You look at Green Bay and you look at Dallas. I know Dallas hasn't, like, won as much in the playoffs. Like, they have a certain way of doing things. Green Bay has a certain way of doing things. And then when you go to Houston and you see the way that things are being done and, like, you can't do anything about it and you're just stuck in it, you're like, there's no outlet. Like, I think it was just a whirlwind of, like, bad. And it was just shitty.
How difficult is it to be in that locker room and not essentially talk shit? And be like, "Listen, boys, out there, there's greener pastures out there, I promise."
No, it was crazy. It was a crazy time, for sure.
When you think about it, it was all Bill O'Brien, wasn't it?
Well, that's why, because it's like, I think this interview originally came out, like, a week after the Bill O'Brien interview came out.
It's been over the last couple of weeks, so, like, this Bussin' with the Boys interview.
Yeah.
Taylor Lewan, Will Compton,
so,
and Randall Cobb.
It was, like, very funny to hear Bill, when he did his interview, talk about what he regretted and that he didn't want to be a GM. He felt like he was still a good coach. But then you hear Cobb or anyone else talk about their time here in Houston, and it's everything you've heard. It's Teapot Bill. It's, you think back to, you know, the reports that we got about the interactions with him and J.J. Watt that basically led to his firing when it finally happened after that Vikings game. That's what the Bill O'Brien era was. That's where, like, I wish Cal could have figured this out sooner, because maybe you don't get C.J. Stroud, but when he took over after his dad passed, you could tell he had no idea what he was doing, and he
Who
was letting
would,
people
in his
you're
defense.
Right.
That's but, a, it's a lot to
right.
be put on your plate after you're
100%.
Sitting back and watching.
And I think what Cal didn't realize is that he was surrounding himself with people that were yes men or were just kind of frauds. Like, whether it's Jack or Bill or whoever else is in the organization, you know, the fact that you've got PR people, like, with the ability to fire people, basically, at radio stations, like, it's just, to me, like, there's so much going on within the Texans organization at that time that's just, it's a mess. And, like, Cobb's right. Like, it's, Honestly, it's a miracle that the Texans are where they are today. I really wasn't sure that even – not that they're going to win a Super Bowl this year, but the fact that they seem like a competent organization again kind of blows my mind still.
Blows mine too. And you know, yeah, we're gassing Cal McNair up a little bit here, but I think it takes a lot for somebody who has every single resource available, but perhaps thinking that they know better than anybody. I think it takes a lot for a person like that to admit that they don't know what they don't know. And I,
Jeep Crane.
See, he's learning that the hard way.
I hope he's learning that.
We hope.
We hope he's learning that.
Right. Ball. But with Cal McNair and Hannah McNair as well and her involvement, it's very clear to me that, yes, there were bad experiences, but they learn from those bad experiences. And I used to tell people this all the time, even when they were going through their struggles. A very good friend of mine used to tell me that this was the worst owner in the NFL. And I said, look, it's not great right now, but there are a lot of worse ownership situations. This team, at the very least, is willing to spend money to fire coaches in the first year of their contract, which might not look great if it's two black coaches back-to-back. But ultimately, if you're willing to move on from decisions that you deem to be a mistake after 1 year, and you're willing to eat that, I think that means that there is a level of self-awareness that you have. And not all owners can say that they have that. I mean, yeah. Hell, look at the most successful owner in the NFL, at least based off of championships, Bob Kraft, and the way that he handled the end of the Brady and Belichick situation. I mean, they let their best player ever walk to another organization only for them to win a Super Bowl the next year. And it's funny because Bob had learned in the past, but that was a mistake that he made there. You have to learn from those mistakes. The Texans have, and that's why the perception of them has changed so much. And on the other side, this is the question. Who holds the title belt for the biggest dumpster fire in all of sports? Because I don't think anyone's overtaking this franchise after what they did this week. It's Gallon and George. We are at the Gentle Ben Tasting Room in Alvin, Texas. Stick around.
Now back to the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, located at the Gentle Ben Tasting Room in Alvin, with Paul Gallant and Joe George.
We were talking about the changing perception of the Houston Texans in the last segment. From 1 year to the next, they have gone quite a long way. Why is that? A couple of comments on our YouTube at ESPN Houston. Lance Wagner says, Cal didn't figure it out. Hannah did. Well, it doesn't... Cal have to listen to Hannah or listen to other people to perhaps implement some of these changes or sit back and allow some people to take over? I mean, I do think that credit is due when people, instead of being, as Joe said in the last segment, maybe a little bit too meddlesome like Jim Crane or with the Panthers with David Tepper, the opposite, not enough people do it. And they should. I mean, wasn't it Tywin Lannister who told old Tommen right after Joffrey croaked in Game of Thrones, a wise king knows what he knows and what he doesn't, listens to his counselors and heeds their advice?
I mean, look, even if it was Hannah, does it matter? The McNair family figured it out, it seems. Because, like, you know, Paul, I thought there was this weird trend when you look at Cal's tenure as the owner where they would – and then, look, they did the same thing here with Caserio – but where they would never clean house. Like, there would be a power vacuum that would happen. Someone would get fired, and then someone would become the ear of Cal McNair. You know, we saw it with Rick Smith when he got put in charge. Then Bill O'Brien wins that one out. Bill O'Brien beats out the guy from Buffalo. I can't remember his name.
Brian Gain.
Brian Gain.
Who he was in alignment with, supposedly.
Yeah.
That lasted all of 1 year.
And then, like, Jack kind of got the ear over of Cal over Bill O'Brien. And then finally, Nick Caserio seems to have gotten it. Or what I think actually happened is Cal stopped listening to those people as much and said, I'm going to be the owner. My wife and I are going to run this team. And you guys are going to do your job. And we are not going to meddle. And I think that's what sometimes makes the best owners in sports is the ones who are willing to spend money and the ones who don't meddle. Well, as soon as you start meddling, that's when things become messy. Like, whether it's – and it's not, like, not to beat up on Jim Crane too much because he's had so much success. But what you're seeing right now the actions, the decisions they made with firing James Click and they did after that, it hasn't gone well.
No.
But you look at what's going on in, you know, Dallas. Dallas has a meddling owner. Like, while they have great success as a franchise overall, what have they done recently? And you have an owner that, if it wasn't for his son, would have taken, you know, Johnny Manziel in the first round a couple years ago instead of taking a Hall of Famer.
It would have been fun, at least.
It would have been fun for like 6 months. And they might not have cut Johnny as fast as the Browns did.
I don't know.
It might have been a longer story, honestly.
I think Johnny might have been caught doing what he was doing off the field a lot more quickly in Dallas than in Cleveland. Now, we ask the question going into the commercial break, who has the title belt as the biggest sports dumpster fire? I think it's got to be the Detroit Pistons. They gave him a Monty Williams, who they fired yesterday, they gave him a 6-year, $78 million deal. He is still owed $65 million of said deal. And in his first year, this man that they decided to pay so much money, they tied an NBA record with 28 consecutive losses. And also, once again, if I'm not mistaken, the NBA draft lottery did not go their way. So they're going to be stuck at this holding pattern of stink for probably quite some time. I don't know if anybody else take that away from the Pistons where they're at right now.
So I say Oakland still.
The A's.
The A's.
That's a good one. I you know what? I forgot about them because they don't even really have a home now.
Because they're screwing it up. Like, this kind of went under the radar, but the A's put a request in to play like 7 to 10 neutral site baseball games, even when they moved to Vegas. And the city of Las Vegas is now saying, why do you want taxpayer dollars to come to our city, and then you're going to take games away from us when the biggest sales pitch you have is that you're supposed to bring in tourism? Like a report just came out, most expensive ticket in the NFL right now is the Vegas Raiders.
Yep.
Why? Because every single time there's a road game, you're a Texans fan, you're a Jets fan, whatever, people are flocking to Las Vegas to see their team and to sit at the top of the stadium for $500. The A's are butchering their own move to Vegas. They're going to have to play in Sacramento. Besides them, I think it's the Pistons. And then it's really early, but doesn't it feel like Carolina could be on the radar?
Carolina's on the path. Now, I think with Carolina, the difference is they have a lot of money, but the fact that they are struggling with all the money that they have, that David Tepper has, that is definitely an indictment on them. The only way that you can say that the A's aren't at the absolute bottom is because baseball doesn't have revenue sharing in the same way that the NFL do and that the NBA do. And that's why I feel like you can make a stronger case for teams like the Detroit Pistons or any of the other dregs in the NBA that have been stinky for such a long time, because they all technically have about as much money to work with as you possibly can have in a league short of the NFL.
Yeah.
You know, it's just a matter of what is one team willing to spend and what is one owner willing to sign off of? And, of course, you got to have a good amount of money, I would imagine, in escrow and blah, 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 money things that I barely understand what I'm talking about here. But I will say that the Pistons, having this contract still on the books, thinking about who they're hiring next, with no real path towards getting good again, despite having the amount of money that revenue sharing in the NBA gives them, I mean, holy crap.
Yeah, I mean,
you're stuck.
If Cade Cunningham would have hit in the way they, you know, he could have for them, like maybe we would view them differently. Because one player really can change a franchise so dramatically. Like Cleveland's not a great franchise. But LeBron, obviously, like when he got there, put them on a different stratosphere. Memphis in basketball isn't that great of a franchise. But Ja Morant has them going down this year, but had them going back.
They overachieve. I would say Washington, the Wizards, they've been dreadful for a while.
Maybe Charlotte.
As far as sports towns go, the Commanders and the Wizards in the same city, that might be as bad of a one-city tandem as you're ever going to see.
Yeah. I think it'd be unfair for me to sit here and not say that Jerry Reinsdorf's one of the worst owners in pro sports.
No?
I mean, he's a total disaster. You know, like
who does he own?
The White Sox and the Bulls.
The Bulls used to win.
They used to win. They turned down a top 10 pick for Alex Caruso because he told them to make the playoffs. They got a playing game. I mean,
that's the playoffs, Joe.
The most expensive player that the Astros are facing in this 3-game series versus the White Sox is Andrew Benintendi. He got a $65 million contract.
They gave him $65 million.
It's the biggest contract the White Sox and Jerry Reinsdorf has ever given out.
That's pretty bad.
Like, he is a cheap, terrible, terrible owner.
Yeah.
I mean, look what he did with the Bulls at the end of the 90s, in the early 2000s.
Someone asks from the 503, is a one-year sample size enough to judge it a turnaround when it comes to the Texans from last year to where they're at right now? Well, I suppose you can make that argument, but if you're making that argument, you're not looking at all of the things that would lend you to – that would push you towards if you were going to invest in any football team right now. I mean, aren't you going to do it in a team that won 10 games with a rookie quarterback who set a bunch of records with a rookie head coach too? So I think that's also part of it. And, yeah, that's not necessarily anything that the ownership did, but the perception changes when the talent changes, and – I think that's why people are assuming that this is going to continue. Now, if they fall flat on their face, they are going to be crushed because it would be a very same old Texans kind of season, even if it doesn't mean that that's going to be them forever. I mean, they could have a bad year this coming season and then bounce back the very next, sort of like the Astros in 15, have the fun year in 16, and then they win the World Series in 17.
Yeah, I mean, just because you have a bad season, though, doesn't mean that your ownership group hasn't taken positive strides and becoming just better at their job and being a better franchise. Like there are teams that are, you know, highly dysfunctional, and you would still call them bad owners. Like, I think going back to the money thing, Cincinnati to me is a great example of this. They come off as this not bad ownership group and stable franchise when the reality is they have no money, they spend no money. That's why typically their best players walk in free agency, but Joe Burrow has changed the perception. Personally, as like I would define myself still as an outsider in this, I look at the McNair family and I see, you know, a group that has made strides to be competent, to listen to their fans in a way where they don't dictate the conversation, to, you know, just make strides and not be a total dumpster fire where even if, like, there are going to be bad years. Bob Kraft is still a good owner. They're just having down years. Like, you don't have to win to be a great owner and have great success. That's why I think 1 year is enough of a sample size, because I don't think it's just 1 year. I do think over the last 2 years, really, and even as Jack Easterby is still part of the organization, you started to see positive signs within this group.
It's almost as soon as they decided, hey, we're going to phase him out, is where all the change started to happen and where Hannah McNair seemed to take on a more active role. Galan and George, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. We are at the Gentle Bend Tasting Room in Alvin, Texas. Going to be here all afternoon. Come on down. Have yourself a drink. Coming up next, okay, another team that's trying to change the perception that we have of it is the Houston Rockets. And we're hearing some very interesting things about what they might do before the draft and during the draft. Is it possible that they're in the best position of any team in the league going into it? You're going to hear why that actually might be the case next. Stick around, Galan and George, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.